This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
The night sky for October 2016. Well, we're in a bit of an intermediate phase now between the time when the summer constellations of Lyra, Cygnus and Aquila dominate the southern sky, and then in a few more months we'll have Taurus and Orion and so on. So as darkness falls, and of course it falls a bit earlier every night as we go through the month, one can still see that summer region, the highest star being Deneb in Cygnus, a little over to its right is Vega, and below them, down towards the southwestern horizon, you'll see Altair in Aquila. I'm sure you know those three stars make up what's called the summer triangle, but we can actually see it quite a long time into the autumn. If you, with binoculars perhaps, on a dark night, work upwards about a third of the way from Altair to Vega, you should spot a rather lovely asterism. It's called Brocky's Cluster, or the coat hanger, because it looks just like an upside-down coat hanger. And up to the left of Altair, below Cygnus, nice little constellation. I like it. It's called Delphinus the Dolphin. That's worth looking out for. As you move over to the southern sky, there aren't so many bright stars visible, but there is the square of Pegasus, the upside-down winged horse. The top left-hand star of the square, Alpheratz, is actually Alpha Andromedae, so it's in the constellation of Andromeda, and it's the starting point for finding the lovely galaxy M31, Andromeda. You just move one fairly bright star to the left, fork right a little bit to the second bright star, then turn sharp right, go a further star, and the same distance again, you should see the fuzzy glow of Andromeda. Andromeda is the only galaxy we can actually see with our unaided eyes. With binoculars it'll be clearer still. It's a lovely sight in a small, relatively low-power telescope. Above the galaxy Andromeda is in fact the W-shaped constellation of Cassiopeia. And in fact, the three stars that make up the sort of the V-shape at the lower right, they actually point down to Andromeda galaxy, making it another way to find it. And then further over towards the east, there should be visible a bright yellow star, which is Capella in Auriga, and below that, the orange star, the red giant Aldebaran in Taurus, as those winter constellations come into view. So what about the planets? Well, we can in principle see all of them this month, but I think none of them particularly well. Jupiter, in fact, passed behind the Sun last month and will appear again low above the eastern horizon around the 8th of October. On the 11th, at magnitude minus 1.7, it lies close to Mercury, but there will only be about 5 degrees above the horizon 30 minutes before sunrise. As the month progresses, Jupiter rises a little earlier, so still at magnitude minus 1.7, by the end of October, it rises some 2.5 hours before the Sun. As the Earth moves towards Jupiter, the size of Jupiter's disk increases slightly, from 13.6 to 31.2 arc seconds. So early risers at the end of the month should be able to observe the equatorial bands in the atmosphere and some of the four Galilean moons as they weave their way around it. Saturn. On September the 11th, Saturn, lying in Ophiuchus, will be just 6 degrees above and a little to the left of Antares in Scorpius. It's moving slowly eastwards, but by October's end will still be only 7 degrees distant. Its brightness stays constant during the month at about plus 0.5, whilst its angular size drops slightly from 15.9 to 15.4 arc seconds. However, the rings are almost at their most open at 26 degrees from edge on, so still make a magnificent sight. Some 20 degrees above the southwestern horizon at the start of October, an hour after sunset, it will fall during the month just 10 degrees above the horizon. And so the first few weeks of this month are really our last chance to observe it during this apparition, as it's called. Well, Mercury is just past the peak of its best morning apparition as October begins, shining at magnitude -0.8, some 8 degrees above the eastern horizon, 45 minutes before sunrise. On the 11th, at magnitude -1.1, it will lie just 0.8 degrees to the left of Jupiter. Its disk will then have an angular diameter of 5 arc seconds. Mercury will appear a little lower each morning, becoming lost in the sun's glare by mid-month, as it moves towards superior conjunction with the sun on the 27th. Mars, lying in Sagittarius, reaches its lowest declination, in fact -25 degrees, on October the 3rd, and so will obviously be low above the horizon, in fact some 9 degrees above the horizon in the south-southwestern sky as twilight ends. Fading from magnitude +0.1 to +0.4 during the month, with the disk shrinking to just 8 arc seconds across, also due to its low elevation, it will only appear as a featureless salmon-pink object. It starts the month to the lower left of the Lagoon Nebula, M8, and on the 6th passes close to the top star making up the teapot. It's called Lambda Sagittarii. In the last 2 weeks of October, it passes over the teapot's handle as it moves eastwards across the heavens. It will actually lie closest to the sun on the 29th of the month. Venus can be viewed low in the southwest after sunset, starting the month in Libra with a magnitude of -3.9. On the 17th, it passes into Scorpius, and then on the 25th, into Ophiuchus. As it does so, it will rise a little higher in the sky, but despite its brightness, binoculars might well be needed to spot it. But please, do not use them until after the sun has set. During the month, its angular size increases from 12 to 14 arc seconds, whilst the illuminated percentage of its disk falls from 86 to 78%. Those two factors compensate each other, which is why Venus's brightness stays virtually constant throughout the whole of its apparition at about -4 magnitude. On the 5th of October, Venus passes just below the wide double star Alpha Librae, whilst on the 20th, it passes very close to Delta Scorpii, forming part of the Scorpion's head. But what about some highlights? Well, in fact, October is a good month to observe Uranus with a small telescope. It comes into opposition, that's when it's nearest to the Earth, and roughly due south at midnight, on the night of the 15th of October. So it can be well seen all of this month, particularly around the beginning and end of the month, when the moonlight will not intrude. Its magnitude is +5.9, so Uranus should be easily spotted in binoculars, lying in the southern part of Pisces to the east of the circlet asterism, and east-southeast of the fourth magnitude stars Epsilon Piscium and Delta Piscium. On the night sky page on the Jodrell Bank website, I give a chart to help you find it. It rises to an elevation of about 45 degrees when due south, and given a telescope of 4 inches or so, it should be possible to see it has a disk, just 3.6 arc seconds across, which has a pale green-blue tint. With an 8-inch telescope and perhaps a green filter, you might even see some details in the planet's cloud features. That won't be easy to spot. And you might even find you can see 4 of its satellites, Ariel, Umbriel, Titania and Oberon, all at magnitude around +14. On October the 3rd, after sunset, as twilight fades on the 3rd of October, and given clear skies and a very low horizon in the southwest, you may be able to spot Venus lying down to the left of a very thin crescent moon, just 6.7% illuminated. Now this gives you a chance of observing Earthshine, the dark side of the moon faintly illuminated by light reflected from the Earth. After sunset, on October the 8th, looking south and given clear skies, the first quarter moon will be visible, lying up to the left of Mars, which will be shining at magnitude plus 0.15. Mars, then in Sagittarius, is lying just to the left of the top star of the teapot, Lambda Sagittarii. On October the 11th, 30 minutes before sunrise, given a low horizon to the east and clear skies, you should be able to see Mercury at magnitude minus 1.1, less than 1 degree to the left of Jupiter, which has a magnitude of minus 1.7. On October the 27th, after sunset, if you look low in the southwest and given a low horizon, you should, if clear, be able to spot a nice near-vertical lineup of Saturn, the highest with a magnitude of plus 0.5, below which is Venus at magnitude minus 4, and at the lowest point, Antares at magnitude plus 1. Venus is 100 times brighter than Antares, as by definition, a 5-magnitude difference, in this case from minus 4 to plus 1, corresponds to a brightness ratio of 100. I usually try and say something about an interesting region of the moon. On October the 22nd, the crater Cassini and a mountain called Mons Piton are fairly easy to spot, not far from the Terminator. Mons Piton is an isolated lunar mountain located in the eastern part of Mare Imbrium, southeast of the crater Plato and west of the crater Cassini. It has a diameter of about 25 kilometers and a height of 2.3 kilometers, and the height was determined by the length of the shadow it casts. Cassini is a 57-kilometer diameter crater that has been flooded with lava. The crater floor has then been impacted many times and holds within its borders two further significant craters, Cassini A, the larger, and Cassini B. Well, that's quite a lot to look at during this month. I think no obvious meteor showers, but we just have to wait until November. I hope you have some enjoyable nights viewing the heavens.
Thanks for that, Ian.
And for our Antipodean listeners, here's Claire Bretherton with The Night Sky Where You Are.
Kia ora, and welcome to the October Jodcast from Carter Observatory in Wellington, New Zealand. October is a good time to look out for the zodiacal light, seen as a triangular glow in the west after sunset in a clear dark sky. It is caused by light reflecting off dust along the plane of our solar system. This plane is marked by the ecliptic, the apparent path of the sun across the sky, which runs through the constellations of the zodiac. At this time of the year, the ecliptic makes a steep angle with the horizon, making the zodiacal light easier to observe. As our nights are getting lighter and our days warmer, our winter zodiac constellation of Scorpius or Temeto Amaui drops down towards the horizon, taking cream-coloured Saturn with it. Saturn sits to the right of orange Antares, and with its 29.5-year orbit around the sun, moves very little against the background sky. The pair set shortly before 11 p.m. by the end of the month. In sharp contrast, Venus, with its 225-day orbit, moves quickly eastwards against the background stars, appearing higher and higher in the western evening sky. By the end of the month, it passes between Saturn and Antares, setting over 3 hours after the sun. Red Mars is higher still, and continues to hold its position well this month, moving through the constellation of Sagittarius and setting after around 2 a.m. As we move away from Mars on our inner orbit, it is slowly slipping down the sky and gradually becoming fainter, but it will remain in our evening skies well into the new year. If you have a good pair of binoculars or a small telescope, you might want to look out for another planet this month. Uranus, the second most distant planet in the solar system, reaches opposition on Saturday the 15th. This is when Uranus lies on the opposite side of the Earth to the Sun, reaching its highest point in our skies at around midnight. It is also around this time that the Earth and Uranus are at their closest, although this won't make too much difference to the planet's brightness from our point of view. Uranus will be above the horizon for much of the night, shining at magnitude 5.7 in the constellation of Pisces, the Fishes. On a very dark, clear night, it may just be possible to glimpse Uranus with the naked eye, but a full moon close to the time of opposition will make this impossible at that time. Better to look at either the start or end of the month closer to the new moon. With binoculars, however, Uranus should be relatively easy to spot, as long as you know where to look, although it will appear as just a star-like point of light without the use of a telescope. A little to the north of Pisces is the constellation of Pegasus, the winged horse, which appears to leap across the northern horizon in our evening sky. Pegasus is easy to spot by the great square of stars that makes up his body. The brightest star in the constellation is the reddish star Epsilon Pegasi, marking the horse's muzzle. This star is commonly known as Enif, deriving from the Arabic word for nose. Epsilon Pegasi is an orange supergiant, around 12 times the mass of the Sun, and with a radius some 185 times larger. Nearby, and visible in the same binocular field of view, is the globular cluster M15, one of the oldest and best-known star clusters in the sky, with an estimated age of around 12 billion years. The cluster is located around 34,000 light-years away and measures 175 light-years across. M15 is probably the most densely packed globular cluster in our galaxy, with half of its mass concentrated within 10 light-years of the center. It has been suggested that this massive concentration of stars may be caused by a rare type of supermassive black hole in the cluster's core. With binoculars, M15 will appear as a fuzzy star, whilst a medium-sized or larger telescope will reveal individual stars, particularly towards the outer regions, appearing as chains and streams radiating out from the core. M15 also contains the planetary nebula P-Swan, the first to be found within a globular cluster. At magnitude 15.5, this is a faint object, and a telescope with an aperture of at least 300 millimeters would be needed to observe it. The star at the bottom right of the Great Square of Pegasus is in fact Alpha Andromedae, or Alpharats, the brightest star in the constellation of Andromeda. Located some 97 light-years away from Earth, it is a spectroscopic binary star whose two components orbit each other in just 100 days. Alpharats is a great starting point to star hop to the Great Galaxy in Andromeda, or M31. The nearest large spiral galaxy to our own, M31 makes a rare appearance in our southern hemisphere skies at this time of year, but you'll need a good dark sky and a clear view of the northern horizon to spot it. The further north you go, the better your chances of finding it. From Alpharats, look for two chains of stars extending out to the east. Hop along the uppermost and brightest of these chains, past Delta Andromedae to Mirac, which is Beta Andromedae, and then turn sharp right and head down to Mu Andromedae, before jumping on the same distance again to find the galaxy. The Andromeda galaxy covers an area around 6 times the diameter of the full moon, but only the brighter central region is easily visible to the naked eye, or with binoculars or a small telescope. At 2.5 million light-years away, and magnitude 3.4, M31 is the most distant object easily visible to the naked eye. Andromeda is thought to contain around 1 trillion stars, well over twice the number estimated in our own Milky Way. Some recent studies, however, have suggested that the Milky Way may contain more dark matter than Andromeda, giving the two galaxies a similar mass. M31 is approaching the Milky Way at 110 kilometers per second, and is expected to collide and merge with our galaxy in around 4 billion years. A little higher and towards the east, the Triangulum Galaxy, or M33, is better placed in our skies. At around 3 million light-years from Earth and shining at magnitude 5.7, it is just at the limit of naked eye visibility under excellent conditions, making it one of the most distant objects able to be glimpsed unaided. With the mass of tens of billions of suns, M33 is the third largest member of the local group. Like the Andromeda Galaxy, it is also approaching us, at around 100,000 kilometers per hour. To find M33, head back from Andromeda towards Mirac and then continue a similar distance to the other side. Whilst M33 with the naked eye is a challenge, it is easily observable in a pair of binoculars. The most striking feature of the Triangulum Galaxy is a massive region of star formation known as NGC 604, which can be seen with a small telescope. NGC 604 is 100 times larger than the Orion Nebula and contains over 200 hot, massive blue stars formed just 3 million years ago. In fact, if it were at the same distance as the Orion Nebula, only the Moon would be brighter in the nighttime sky. Of course, there are two galaxies that are always visible in our night sky, the large and small Magellanic Clouds, which are circumpolar here in New Zealand. To find the Magellanic Clouds, first look for the bright star Canopus, twinkling colourfully low in the southeast. The Magellanic Clouds appear as two small smudges of light above it. They are irregular dwarf galaxies that neighbour our own. Whilst these galaxies are much smaller than the Milky Way, they still contain hundreds of millions of stars. The Large Magellanic Cloud, or LMC, is the lower of the two and is located 160,000 light-years away. Through binoculars or a small telescope, you may be able to spot a number of young star clusters visible as small patches of light. The LMC also contains a massive star formation region, one of the largest and brightest known, called the Tarantula Nebula, or 30 Doradus. Spanning around 600 light-years across and covering 13 arc-minutes in the sky, the Tarantula Nebula contains over 800,000 stars and protostars and is the most active starburst region identified within our local group of galaxies. If it were placed at the same distance as the Orion Nebula, it would be so bright that it would cast a shadow here on Earth. The star formation activity within the Tarantula Nebula began a few tens of millions of years ago, and some of the largest and brightest stars born within this region have already reached the ends of their short lives. In February 1987, supernova SN1987A was discovered in the outskirts of the Tarantula Nebula by astronomers at Las Campanas Observatory in Chile and independently by prolific amateur astronomer Albert Jones here in New Zealand. This supernova was the closest since the invention of the telescope just over 400 years ago and provided a unique opportunity for astronomers to study such an event in unprecedented detail. Reaching a peak magnitude of around 3, SN1987A was easily bright enough to spot with the naked eye. Smaller and more distant at around 200,000 light-years is the Small Magellanic Cloud, or SMC. To the top right of this galaxy you may spot a faint fuzzy star. This object is not actually associated with the SMC, but is a beautiful globular cluster called 47 Tucanae, or NGC 104. And is actually located just a tenth of the distance away on the outskirts of our own galaxy. At magnitude 4.9, it's the second brightest globular cluster in the sky after Omega Centauri, and can be easily seen with the naked eye. With binoculars or a small telescope, it is a wonderful sight, revealing a densely packed central core, whilst larger telescopes will start to resolve some of its millions of ancient stars. Wishing you clear skies and happy galaxy hunting from the team here at Space Place at Carter Observatory.